Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. It's a Monday. Chad Hartman, Dave Harrigan, Susie Jones with the news. We are here for the next 3 hours, and we are filled with excellent guests today, including right at the start, the former mayor of St. Paul, the former senator of this state, Norm Coleman, is with us. Norm, like all guests on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Norm played a significant part in the Pete Hegseth confirmation process. The Minnesota native was confirmed in a 51-50 Friday night vote to become the Secretary of Defense, and changes are already taking place under Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth. Norm, I appreciate your time. I want to get you to react. And first of all, I want to say I have great respect for what Pete Hegseth has done intellectually. I mean, to attend Princeton and Harvard is very impressive. To serve our country in Iraq and Afghanistan and also at Guantanamo Bay, he deserves our praise, just like our soldiers all across the globe deserve our praise. But Major Garrett is a regular on this show, well-respected Washington, D.C. insider who is an excellent reporter, excellent commentator, and is not afraid to comment on either side. And Major on Friday made this comment that no other president outside of Donald Trump would have selected Pete Hegseth, considering his limited business experience, with some questions about the success of that, with the questions that we've all discussed before on allegations of drinking and abuse, that this was done because of Pete Hegseth's loyalty to Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth's appearances on Fox. In fact, he is an outstanding speaker. Do you disagree with Major Garrett?
I strongly disagree. And I had the benefit of sitting with Pete in meetings with 52 United States senators, Chad. And every one of those meetings, by the way, they came with questions. They were about an hour long. Even the supporters, they, you know, nobody wanted to be fooled. Nobody wanted to be embarrassed. And so Pete answered those questions and answered them to the satisfaction of certainly, you know, the majority there. But I have to say this. No other president, Donald Trump, would have moved the embassy to Jerusalem. But he did. Donald Trump wanted a disruptor. He said to Pete, when he asked him to do this, he said, "Pete, I've tried generals. I've tried CEOs. I've tried politicians. The Defense Department needs change. I need somebody with dirt on their boots who's kicked down doors to change, get back to the warfighter, get back to lethality, get back to standards, get rid of DEI, get rid of critical race theory, focus on a lethal military force that scares the enemy so we don't have to engage in wars." And I got to tell you, you know, the Harvard-Princeton thing, it wasn't affirmative action. Pete is a smart guy. And he earned all that, and he earned the support of senators to get confirmed.
It was mainly partisan because all the Democrats voted no, but three individuals who you know, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Mitch McConnell, voted no. And in some ways, aren't they saying that you're exactly right what you said in what Donald Trump wants, and he's a disruptor, but that Donald Trump could have found someone with higher qualifications? Isn't that clearly what the Republicans were saying?
They were saying that from their perspective, he didn't have what they thought that you needed to have in a Secretary of Defense. Okay, I respect Susan, I respect Lisa, I respect Mitch, but Pete brings a different quality. And he you know, he's asked the question of, you know, so what do you run an $850 billion, you know, business? That's a Pentagon, the Defense Department, largest business in, mm-hmm. in the world. And his response was, by the way, very few people have, and very few people have successfully. He says, I know what I don't know. My job is not to run the building. My job, he says, is to lead the people that run the building and to hold them accountable. And if they're not accountable, then get rid of and bring new folks in. So you don't have to, you know, you don't have to know the building. They had a different perception of that. But I think Pete's right on. I think he's going to bring the qualities of a warfighter. You know, I got to tell you, 99% of the people in that building are probably thrilled that Pete is now there because he knows them. He's fought in their wars. He was a medaled and a warrior, and so he brings that mentality. There were hundreds of Navy SEALs and Delta and Army folks there at that hearing. It was even the senators were somewhat overwhelmed, you know, showing their support for Pete because he's one of them. So he's brought somebody who's fought in the wars that they fought. He's not part of the military-industrial complex. He's not looking for a job on the board of Boeing and Lockheed when he gets done. He's looking to return the Defense Department to the concept of lethality, anything not tied into lethality, not tied into making sure the warfighter is as best equipped as they can be. We don't want to fight wars. But when we go in, by the way, we want overwhelming in our force. We want to decisively beat the enemy, and they need to know we do that. And just one other thought. On day one, I got to make you bet that recruitment will change almost over, you know, immediately. When you have the Air Force Academy that tells its students that they didn't use the phrase mom or dad when they're writing home, when you have a Secretary of the Navy that says that the number one priority of the Navy is global warming, okay, something's wrong. Houston, you've got a problem. Pete's going to change. He already has changed it right away. Right away, DEI is out. Critical race theory is out. Lethality, standards, accountability, that's what he's bringing. And I think you'll see a very dramatic and positive change. And I got to tell you, I'm going to be real blunt. When I first heard the announcement, I wasn't sure myself. Well, Pete Hegseth.
Yeah. So what did you ask him? Because let me jump in. Those yeah. are serious. We've known each other 30 plus years. I know you care about any sort of allegations related to this. So what convinced you that either they didn't happen or he is a changed person? Because there were some conflicting comments, Norm, where I've learned and I'm a better person or that didn't happen. And I think that added to some of the confusion from individuals who wanted to be objective.
No, listen, in my introduction, you know, I've said that you know, I quoted, you know, Amazing Grace, okay? You know, peace shows us that, you know, with redemption you can be saved. And by the way, I'm a Jewish kid saying that. But what changed me is having been with him in those meetings, having watched his response. You know, so he didn't have perfect marriages, okay? I'm sure there are decisions he made in life that he regrets. But is there any doubt in my mind that he is a capable person, that he brings now with when he said he was saved by two J's, by Jesus and Jennifer, his wife. I watched them together. I watched her. I came away, Chad, really convinced that this guy has what it takes to get the job done, and that he really is true to himself. And you know, he said that this is the biggest deployment that he'll ever have. Okay, so, you know, in deployments, you don't drink. He's deployed now. He's not coming home after war. And by the way, here's a guy who went to Princeton and then enlisted. He could have been on Wall Street. He could have been with Bear Stearns. He enlisted. Then he goes back. He does some things outside. And in the height of Afghanistan, he goes back in. Okay, and so he is a patriot. He's a warrior. And I really think that he's in a place in his life now that he will provide the kind of leadership that people can be proud of. And I believe that, and I saw it firsthand. And I would just say one other comment here. We did those 50-something meetings. I will tell you that in every meeting, we walked out better than we walked in because the members had those questions, listened to him, listened to his response, listened to his vision of what he can do to move the department forward, to change recruiting, to focus on lethality, to focus on standards. And in every one of those meetings, we walked out better than we walked in. And so that's the reason that I walked away, saying this guy can do what needs to be done. You know, he's now the secretary. What do you call someone whose confirmation is decided by a tie vote and then a cast vote cast by the vice president, you call them Mr. Secretary. And he is the secretary, and yep. He's changed already day one.
Right.
Day one, CRT, DEI, it's out. Lethality is the focus, and I think the warfighters will be proud of that.
Norm, hang on. We're going to squeeze in a short break. I have one more question of Pete Hegseth, but I want to get Norm's comments on other actions by President Trump. This is the former mayor of St. Paul, former Senator Norm Coleman, right here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. We continue with the former Senator Norm Coleman, primarily on Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense. Norm played a significant part in his confirmation process. We'll get to other matters tied to the Trump administration. Busy show today. Lisa Damoth, the Speaker, right now the Speaker of the House. They had the ruling from the Supreme Court, Minnesota Supreme Court, on Friday, which went against them. So where are we at with the deal? Overrated 105. 205 Chip Scoggins, and then this just added the police chief of Minneapolis, Brian O'Hara, is with us at 235. Norm, why didn't Pete Hegseth meet with the Democrats? He's not Secretary of Defense only for Republicans. He's for the entire country. So, to me, he should stand up and meet with a number of Democrats also.
Chad, absolutely. We reached out to the Democrats shortly after his, like around Thanksgiving. Okay, they didn't want to meet. They didn't meet with him. They didn't respond. Literally a week before the hearing.
So not a single Democrat responded to requests.
No,
they all said they wouldn't meet with him.
Jack Reed, less than a week before the hearing, finally said, "Now we'll meet." So, and by the way, by that point, 10 of the 12 on the committee had filed a letter saying they were going to oppose his nomination. So Pete said, "So we weren't going to delay the confirmation to have meetings with folks who didn't respond when we kind of reached out earlier on." And then those had already said they're not going to confirm him. They're going to not oppose. He said, I'll meet with him, but I'll meet with him after the confirmation. So, yes, he is the chairman.
Did he meet with him?
For everybody, he met with Fetterman and he met with Jack Reed. Okay, but he wasn't going to hold off the confirmation to meet with folks who didn't respond over a month earlier. And so he will meet with everyone, even though they had already made up their minds. And before the hearing, they had signed a letter saying they were going to oppose him, but he will still meet with them because he needs to work with them. He knows that, and he's prepared to work with all of them. And so he'll have that out.
I'll look forward to that. Let me just jump in to try to get to a number of items because you're great on this, but I want to try to jump in and get to – here's my last Hegseth situation.
Okay.
Most presidents get what they want from their secretary. So I'm not acting like Trump is different from Biden and Bush and Obama, et cetera. But occasionally, and you know this well, secretaries of vitally important positions have to say no. As an example, Mark Esper, defense secretary. When Donald Trump wanted to use the military on protesters in D.C., he convinced Donald Trump, the president of the United States, you shouldn't do that. Pete Hegseth, to me, is always loyal to Donald Trump, and he's allowed to do that. But his top loyalty now is to the United States of America. Convince me and the audience, if they are skeptical, that there are going to be times when Pete Hegseth is going to stare the President of the United States in his face and say, we should not do that.
So first of all, just so you understand, his oath is both to the Constitution and probably, I think, a different oath than any other cabinet member. He swears, to uphold, that's his oath, okay? Also, by the way, to obey the orders of the commander-in-chief. So that's his, as you get sworn in, you start with that. I think what Esper did and what Pete will do is he'll give his best judgment to the president. Ultimately, the president will pass the order, okay? So I have no doubt that he will bring his best judgment to the table. And then the president ultimately will make the decision. I think he understands that. He took an oath to it. His oath is to the Constitution of the United States. It's also to follow the orders of the commander-in-chief. So his obligation, Chad, is to give the commander-in-chief his best counsel. Esper gave the commander-in-chief his best counsel, and then ultimately the commander-in-chief made the decision. Pete Hegseth will give the commander-in-chief his best counsel, and ultimately the commander-in-chief will give the final decision. That's the way the system works. That's what Esper did, and I have no doubt that's what Hegseth will do.
Donald Trump was wrong for pardoning the individuals who committed violent assaults on the police officers, correct?
Yeah, I would not have made that decision. I don't think that was the right thing to do.
Did you do it?
Made that, and let me just say this. What I do understand is that, you know, you look at the January 6th folks and how they were treated and the severity of the offenses and all done in federal court, long sentences. And then you look, you know, Portland, you know, post George Floyd, 100 people charged, 60 dismissed, the rest of them minor. Most, I don't even know if they went into federal court. Is there disparity in treatment? Absolutely. If anyone is involved in something that involves an attack on an officer, I wouldn't have made that decision.
The Middle East means a great deal to you. We have a ceasefire, which is obviously very tenuous because Hamas cannot be trusted. And there's obviously a lot of pressure on Bibi Netanyahu from all throughout his government. When Donald Trump says over the weekend that what should happen is we should clean out all of Gaza, that Jordan should step up, that Egypt should step up as a very loyal supporter of Israel, why should Palestinians believe that if they're forced to go to other countries, they'll be even allowed to go back to Gaza? And I'm not talking Hamas. Hamas is despicable. I want them all arrested, eliminated. I'm talking Palestinians who want to live a normal life that you and I are living and that all the people who are listening to us right now have a chance to live.
And ultimately, we need peace in the region. And the killing has to, certainly terrorists like Hamas cannot be allowed to have any power. But Chad, this is kind of interesting. I think Donald Trump is approaching that as a builder. And what I mean that is so people are going back into Gaza in buildings that have been kind of, you know, taken apart. You couldn't get a certificate of occupancy in the worst slum in the United States to allow people to go back there. And I think Donald Trump, honestly, and I haven't spoken to him about this, but I think he's bringing a builder's mentality. So, you know, something, you just got to tear those things down. You got to get rid of the tunnels underneath. You got to rebuild. And so if you have and so I'm just saying that I you know, ultimately.
But will the Palestinians be allowed to go back and live there?
Well, they should be. And you should have the other, the Egypts and the Jordans and the Saudi Arabias and others involved, our allies in the region, our friends in the region, kind of working together to rebuild. But I honestly think that is a very practical comment from somebody who's been a builder and looks and says, wait, so we're going to send people back into this kind of rubble, this you know, this environment that is just absolutely toxic. So you know, ultimately, you've got to have peace in the region. The hostility has to stop. Okay, and folks have to live together. But Israel can't live together if you've got a group of folks who are intent on killing every Jew. And that's what they were doing on October 7th. That's what they have vowed to continue to do. So Hamas has to be totally destroyed. Secretary Hegseth said online, you know, kill all of Hamas. And I agree with him on that. But ultimately, there's got to be peace in the region. I think Trump's comments were from a very practical perspective. How you work it out, I don't have the solution. But it is going to take our friends in the region and the United States working together to finally reach a resolution in which the Palestinian people, okay, finally have a future and a positive future. But it can't be a future if they're voting in and they're giving the reins of leadership to a terrorist group like Hamas.
Last thing, and I appreciate your time, Norm Coleman here. Clearly, Israel should have responded with force. Innocent individuals who had nothing to do with government and the military apparatus were slaughtered. They were tortured. They're still being held hostage, and Hamas needs to pay for that. But we also have a lot of Palestinians who had nowhere to go, did not want to be part of it, and I get that in war, innocents die. We've done it before. As much as you support Israel, do you believe too many Palestinians died as collateral damage to the atrocious, indefensible actions by Hamas?
I believe that Israel, probably more than any other nation on earth, does more to kind of avoid collateral damage, more than, by the way, we did in Iraq, we did in other places. They call cell phones, they drop leaflets, they do all that they can do. And you have Hamas, and that's where the responsibility is. They use hospitals to hold hostages. They use civilians as shields. They don't care who dies. And so everyone puts it on Israel, but Hamas, who started this on October 7th, it's Hamas who uses their own people as human shields. It's Hamas. We're seeing all the reports now of hostages being held in UN facilities. And so in the end, Israel has to get rid of Hamas. Otherwise, Hamas will do what even today they still say they want to do, which is to kill all the Jews. And that can't be allowed to happen, Chad.
How's your health?
Chad, my health is great. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, a cancer in the neck and throat, stage four. 5 years ago, they said we probably should do palliative when they thought it had come back again. They literally said, you can go up to your lake place in northern Minnesota and let's do palliative. That means you're going to die. And I did immunotherapy. And the last time I went, which is a little less than a year, I got to go back in a few months. They told me I don't have to come back. So I do blood tests every 3 months and to see if I have tumor DNA in my blood, and it hasn't shown any. Chad, I'm a believer in miracles. I have to tell you, David Ben-Gurion, first prime minister of Israel, said anybody who doesn't believe in miracles is not a realist. I can tell you, I went from they thinking I was going to die to immunotherapy. And I actually said to my doc, so wait, you thought I was going to die, right? And she said, well, you know, about 25% of the time with immuno, it shrinks the tumors. And yeah, we really did. For whatever reason, you're doing okay. And literally they said, we'd like you to come back to do long-term studies, but you don't have to come back. So I'm still going back to Mayo. I'm doing the blood test. But God has been very good to me, Chad.
Always appreciate it, sir. We'll talk again soon.
Take care. Great talking to you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Norm Coleman right here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. Lottery action. I'll try to get to it later, but we just have more guests than we normally do because we were able to track down a lot of good people, including Lisa Damoth. Supreme Court ruling in Minnesota goes against him Friday. Why don't we have a deal? Or do we have a deal? Because Melissa Hortman was spotted at the Capitol earlier today. Did they meet? Does she want to break some news with us? Lisa Damoth, Republican, right now Speaker of the House, is minutes away on CCO. Minnesota Supreme Court reacted quickly to the debate in St. Paul. Very differing views from the Democrats and Republicans on what you need for the majority. What is a quorum? Right now, you still have the Democrats who are not showing up. You have a total of 133 who seemingly are eligible to be seated. You have the Brad Tabke situation where Lisa Damoth and the Republicans have questioned whether they would seat. And then because Curtis Johnson lied and said he lived in a district, that seat is still up in the air. And we're still weeks away from an election. But what is a quorum? In the end, the Supreme Court ruled that the 68 House members must be present for a quorum. They cited Article 4, Section 13. Vacancies do not reduce the number required for a majority of each house to constitute a quorum. So Lisa Damoth, right now the Speaker of the Republicans, because the Democrats are not showing up. You obviously were disappointed by the ruling. Do you have a different feeling about the ruling as we chat today here on a Monday at 12:38?
Well, good afternoon, Chad. And you've laid this out perfectly for your listeners. You know, the reality that there are 133 members of the Minnesota House that are eligible right now because of that vacancy over in Roseville, which the governor has not even called for that special election. But you've laid that out really clear. We felt strongly that a quorum would be 67. The decision by the Supreme Court on Friday evening said that they feel that it is 68, and we will definitely abide by that. There's no question about that. So what has happened now, Chad, as of this morning? House Republicans are here doing the work for the people, but because of that, we unfortunately cannot hold any of our committee hearings, and the organization that we've been hard at work over the last 2 weeks where Democrats have not yet shown up to work, that all basically is undone. It will get done again once Democrats choose to come to work. But unfortunately, they are holding up the work of the people of Minnesota right now by not showing up.
Okay, Melissa Hortman was spotted at the Capitol today. She spoke with Blois Olson yesterday, right here on CCO, and said she'd reached out to you. She had not heard from you. Did you and Melissa Hortman speak today, either on the phone or in person, about trying to strike a deal?
You know, we have been communicating every day since Friday, Chad. And I would say that what needs to happen is, instead of just being at the Capitol randomly, House Democrats need to show up for work. And it's important for you and your listeners to recognize that it would take one Democrat right now to recognize their election certificate and show up for work. We would be able to completely organize. Right now, the House Republicans have 67 and the House Democrats have 66. That's a one-seat advantage. We know it's going to take a bipartisan effort to pass any bills. It takes 68 votes to pass a bill. But the committee work and the importance of what we do in these first few days and weeks of session, in a very short 5-month session, needs to get started. That's all that's standing in the way, is for one or more Democrats to do what people have elected them to do, show up in St. Paul and get to work, working alongside Republicans on each measure.
Okay. What Hortman has said multiple times before is that they're willing to accept that you are in the majority until the election takes place, and I will follow up on the governor and the point you raised there, because then it gets valid, but that once that election happens, with the Democrats heavy favorites, not guaranteed, but it's a strong leaning Democratic leaning district, that if it's then 67-66, you will go back to the agreement. And also what you will do is you will seat Brad Tapke. The courts, you said you'll follow the courts. You'll follow the Supreme Court ruling. The court ruled for Tapke. So why not agree to that? That until the election happens, and it's not even scheduled, you guys are in the majority. Try to get as much done as possible. You know you still have a Senate that is split. You still have the governor, who is a Democrat. But acknowledge Tapke's victory. You get to run it. But then when it's 67-67, you go with the Sharon agreement. Isn't that what most reasonable people think should happen?
When we consider the issue over in the Shakopee case with Representative Brad Tapke, we have said all along that we would look at all of our options. And most of those comments were made prior to the court deciding. Unfortunately, we got that district court decision the very morning that of the first day of session, which would have been January 14th. We said that we would look at their decision and that we would still consider any potential option, which could include where we by law have the responsibility or the opportunity to have the House of Representatives judge the eligibility of the membership. There has been no decision to say we wouldn't seat him or that we definitely would. What we know right now, though, is Democrats are using that as the distraction, saying this is why we can't come to work. We're afraid to work with Republicans. But what they're not saying is that they are down one member because their candidate over in Roseville cheated the system and wasn't eligible to become a member of the legislature. So they're saying,
but don't we have those decisions? Let me just jump in, Lisa.
I get it.
I've said personally that if anybody from either party runs, that it's the responsibility of not the party and the individual. And if going forward, when you have another election, that party's not represented, I wouldn't have a problem with that person. None, zero, zilch. But that's not how it works right now. So that election has to take place. It's going to. But aren't you picking and choosing when you're going to respect the courts? I get it. You would have rather had another election that is a bipartisan district. Republicans may have won it, but the judge ruled. So why not say Tapke is seated? Because if you continue to say, or if Hortman does, well, we'll decide on our own who we're going to seat. Doesn't that set a dangerous precedent going forward, whether Republicans are in charge or Democrats are in charge?
You know, to your point, we are not trying to set a dangerous precedent. But what we are saying is right now, when they show up, we will organize a house. They've said, just, you know, count us as if we're a tie, even if we give you a few weeks of total control. Again, going back, Chad, we need bipartisan work to pass any bill. So as much as they want to say in the public that they are willing to work with us, by not even showing up to work shows that they do not want to work with Republicans. And so by saying we will only
Say, Lisa, that they did this and then they were validated by the courts. I think they should be there. Okay, I've made that point over and over and over again. Show up to work. But wouldn't they say, guess what? We now, it now is shown that we now have this leverage, so until you strike a deal, we're not going to show up. I don't like it, but that's their point.
Right. And that is their point. I have made it very clear in any of my conversations with Melissa Hortman that if and when the voters decide the 40B, the Roseville seat, with those decisions by the voters, if we go back to a 67-67 tie, that I would definitely work on some aspects of a sharing agreement. But to tie our hands from the very beginning, when that does not even exist right now, is very disingenuous. And it is actually holding Minnesota hostage by saying, we will not work with you unless you promise us that no matter what, we have full 50-50 control. My concern is that they would jam everything at the end and we will not get things done, as they've already proven that they can do before even showing up. Super secret swearing.
But now
in
you have
2 days before.
You have the power of 67-67, so they can't jam. You know, I get that there isn't a long precedent of this. And this is Lisa Damoth, leader of the Republican Party in the House. She believes the Speaker of the House right now. They're showing up. She is the Speaker of the House. Democrats are not showing up. But they continue to contend. And to me, again, I think common sense says that you get to be the Speaker until it's 67-67. But if it's even and the House is in session for two more years, why should you get to be the majority in the Speaker if it's even as opposed to a one-vote margin, which you have as of now?
Right. And I understand that. But again, going back to the fact, you know, I don't think there's any one of the 66 Democrats in the House of Representatives right now that cheated and caused the issue in Roseville. But it was their endorsed candidate. And elections do have consequences. To assume on their part that I would not act as Speaker and be fair for the next 2 years and work collaboratively with them is very disrespectful. Now, what we have seen under full Democrat control over the last 2 years, that no matter how slim the majorities are held in either body, they will jam through all of their partisan priorities. I have not ever said that I would do that. I will work with them, but they now have the ability. If they say, okay, if you do the complete power sharing, we'll show up for work, they would have the ability to hold back their votes to get anything done over the next 2 years. They've proven that they will already grind to a screeching halt the work of the House of Representatives. So as we talk through this, there's different layers of it. Yes, I want to work with them. Yes, I want to give co-chairs in some of the committees and equal membership in some of the committees. Yes, I want to have the conversation about the tab key seating or not seating. But until they are actually going to show up for work and want to have those truthful conversations and show in good faith that they will work with Republicans, it really brings into question how honest they're being about that. Or is this their level of a power control that they're reaching for with the two-year long game in mind, not just the first couple of weeks? They would not have
to pass
a single thing.
I got to jump in just time, and I really appreciate your availability. Yeah. You're busy, and you've made yourself available when a lot of others don't. Why do you think the governor hasn't scheduled the election yet?
You know, the governor made a statement as far as the Supreme Court ruling saying now Republicans have to work with Democrats. I would choose to request that the governor would actually look at the full ruling of the Supreme Court that it said basically legislature, you need to work together. So it's not Republicans now work with Democrats. It's Democrats show up for work so I can call this special election. I don't know why he hasn't called it yet. He clearly tried to call it too early and was caught by the Supreme Court, and they ruled that he was premature in that calling. Who knows when he'll actually call for that?
Lisa, thank you very much for your time. You know we'll reach out again.
Thank
I appreciate
you, Chad.
It.
Yep, thank
Lisa
you.
Lisa Damuth, the speaker, the temporary speaker, it's clear. She thinks she should be the speaker for the next 2 years and will offer some sharing agreements still up in the air on Tapke. We had a lot of texts on Norm Coleman, a lot of texts on Lisa Damuth. I'm going to react to your text, read a lot of texts, get you involved. A reminder, overrated early next hour. 205 Chip Scoggins on, oh yeah, you're not going to watch. BS, you're going to watch. And Brian O'Hara, the chief of police in the city of Minneapolis at 235. Busy show on a Monday here on CCO. We had a bit of a debate, Dave, on who we should have on. And ideally, we're going to try to have Melissa Hortman on tomorrow, see if that works out. I just felt like Damuth was the one to have on today because they lost. But, and again, I'm giving credit to both of them. There are a lot of politicians who don't make themselves available, the governor included. So they both made themselves available. I don't think she's changed at all. You know, again, Democrats show up. That's their leverage, they believe. So now that you've won, show up, and now that Damuth has lost this part of it, I think it's fraught with serious peril. If every time there's something that you don't agree with the court, like the Tapke decision, you're going to look at it and you're going to say, well, we're going to keep looking at it. It's time to say you're going to seat him or not, right? And I'll say it again. I've said it 50 times. In my view, the Democrats shouldn't even be allowed to run in the Curtis Johnson seat, the 40B one. But that's where the law is. They're going to win that seat. So then it's 67-67. You don't get to be the speaker for the entire time if the vote is even. Even if there isn't a precedent to it, unique things happen, Dave, and then you have to deal with them.
Are you saying there can be nuance in politics, Chad, that circumstances perhaps may change and human beings may have to adjust?
I think I'm leaning that way.
Huh, interesting.
I think I'm leaning that way.
Well, I'm firmly disagreeing with you because I don't want to adjust. I'm going to be set in my ways.
That's the problem with most of our world, right?
Yeah, it is. And we're seeing it up close and personal, and we have for a few weeks now in St. Paul. And it's, I mean, after that conversation, does it sound like it's getting any better? It certainly doesn't.
Zero.
Me.
None. None. Norm and Hegseth. Some people are glad I jumped in. Some people are not glad. Or some people feel like I should have jumped in more. We're trying to get to a lot of stuff. I jumped in quite a bit, but I can't jump in on every answer. I'm just not going to. If I follow up and a guest doesn't answer or filibusters, I think you get a feel on when people reached out, Democrats, to talk to them. To me, anybody who's running, whether you're a big-time lefty or big-time righty, if you need to get the Senate's approval, you should show up. Even if they've come out against you, Dave, that's the part of it. And listen, Donald Trump wants incredible loyalty. Most other presidents want loyalty. It's just not to the level of Trump. Come on, we know this. And so, sure, he is the commander-in-chief. He gets great leeway. But we know Donald is capable of some stuff that is borderline constitutional. Dave, you buying that Pete Hegseth's going to say no to him? Because I'm not.
No, I think there's a reason he was chosen. Because, as you said, it's got that incredible loyalty, and it's, you know, what Don says goes, and that's certainly how it seems. Prove us wrong. But
prove us wrong.
Yeah. Yep.
And I use major because I've said it a bunch too, but come on. You think Nikki Haley would have picked Pete Hegseth? And again, he's a very smart man. He's an excellent communicator. He served our country. And I'm not talking about serving, overseeing an $850 billion business, because nobody's done that. But really limited business experience, and it didn't go well. And then all the allegations, to me, that's a point where most people say, we believe in you, but the bar is so high for Secretary of Defense, we're going another way. Trump didn't do that. And let's see how it plays out. We're gonna find out. He's clearly making moves already on DEI and CRT. We got the letters going really quickly. All right, Susie's in, and then Susie is in for overrated, underrated, properly rated. You can chime in right now. 651-461-9226.